You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate. In Haiti, the presidential elections won't happen until November, yet by August, there were already 34 would-be presidents who had thrown their hats in the ring. One of them, the Haitian rap star Wyclef Jean, has gotten the most attention from the international community, but there are several other candidates bear looking into. Here today to help us understand Haiti's current and future political situation is Amy Wilentz, a contributing writer to The New Yorker. Her latest article for the magazine, Running in the Ruins, will appear in this week's issue of the magazine. Amy, good to speak with you.
Nice to speak with you.
Before we get into the politics, a little information down on the ground, the current situation in Haiti. How many people are still living in refugee camps?
They estimate 1 million, maybe 1.2 million, either living in the camps or homeless.
And died in the earthquake and homeless. How many?
Well, 230,000 is the closest estimate. It is an estimate because it was so chaotic in the moments after the earthquake and even in the weeks and months. And I think injured is another 200,000, 300,000. I'm not sure. It's the numbers are staggering.
And bodies properly buried, were there many?
Well, I think there were hundreds of thousands, but properly buried, not properly buried, no. Only a few got to be properly buried because you couldn't get people out from under the wreckage. And when they finally were removed from the wreckage, when they were removed, they were carted away, you know, by the dozens and just dumped.
And the schools, have they started up yet?
Yes, they are trying to start up the schools, but it's only a certain number of schools that can open because so many fell down. Also, Haiti's school system is largely privatized, to put it mildly, almost completely privatized. And a lot of them are tiny little schools that fell down in the earthquake. So those have not reopened.
So it sounds still like a nightmare. Has it gotten marginally better at all?
Well, what's weird about it is that Haiti was kind of a catastrophe already. Unfolding.
Before the earthquake in January.
Yeah, economically and sort of in terms of infrastructure for the people, it was already terrible. So the earthquake happened and so many were killed, and that was nightmarish in the extreme, the worst natural disaster, I think, in centuries. But the refugee camps have now come to look a lot like Haitian shantytowns. They look very permanent. They look very much, you know, when you see a report on these refugee camps, you think, oh, my God, how can people live like that? But the truth of the matter is they were living like that. The real difference is that now a lot of the people who are living in shantytown conditions were people who were sort of very lower middle class before. And for them, it's a real shock. And it's destroyed the tiny little bit they were able to accomplish before the earthquake.
Haiti's current president is René Préval. He was criticized right after the earthquake for not making a public statement and not doing more for the initial cleanup. Has he been motivated? Have things changed in that regard?
Look, I think he's motivated. He's kind of an odd leader. Most leaders in those conditions, look at Rudy Giuliani. Now, many people didn't like Rudy Giuliani, but after 9/11, he did sort of rise to the political occasion. When I spoke to President Préval on my last trip, when I was reporting the New Yorker piece, I asked him about this, and I know that he's very sensitive about it, but he had a kind of pride about not having used such a terrible disaster, this is how he sees it, as a political grandstanding moment. He didn't think it was proper, he said, to go out in front of the TV cameras, in front of the dead, and in front of children who are now orphaned, and sort of broadcast himself and use it as a political tool. He thought it was better to go to ambassadors and world leaders and see what he could drum up in terms of help. That's how he puts it. But it was kind of astonishing at the moment not to see the president of the country, you know.
Is President Préval ruling under emergency powers
he
right now?
He is ruling under what are seemingly unconstitutional emergency powers declared in April for 18 months. I believe it's only a month and a half that you can declare emergency powers for. I'm not sure, but the Haitian Constitution is susceptible to many interpretations by Haitian politicians.
Is he getting opposition to that, or are people going along with it?
There has been opposition to that, but you know, the government lost 30% of public service workers and officials in the earthquake. The ones who were the very best were at work at you know, almost 5 o'clock when the earthquake struck. So they lost some of their best and brightest. And so
I think that's worth repeating. 30% of the government.
30%, yes. 30% overall. 25% were killed, and the other 5% either left the government to go work for the new non-governmental organizations that have come in to help with the earthquake, or were wounded and are no longer serving or have left the country. So that's 30% of your people. And so a lot of people who might have opposed the president's declaration of emergency powers weren't there to oppose it. And those who did, you know, it's hard in the wake of an earthquake to get together your political opposition and really move.
What do the emergency powers actually entail?
Well, they allow him basically to govern by decree because there is no real parliament at this point. Lots of parliamentarians were killed, you know, senators and assembly people. And so they're waiting for this election to elect a new parliament. So essentially, Preval is ruling by decree until November 28th, the day of the elections, and even until February 7th when a new president will be seated.
I'm Elliot Forrest filling in for Leonard Lopate. I'm speaking with Amy Wilentz. Her September 6th issue of The New Yorker article, Running in the Ruins, Haiti Prepares to Elect a President. They actually lost the presidential palace in the January earthquake. I can't help but think that it's like all the disaster movies that we see. It's like losing the White House, I guess.
It is just like losing the White House. I mean, the presidential palace, let's face it, in Haiti has been home to a lot of unsavory leaders whom you know, my associations with the presidential palace are not so great. I've been there during military juntas. Papa Doc, the very, very violent dictator, ruled from there. So one's associations are not entirely happy, but still to see what is basically an emblem of the nation, and it's not even completely destroyed. It's a three-domed building, and the domes are kind of tossed this way and that by the earthquake, and it keeps on sinking further and further into its foundations. It's very distressing. On the other hand, it was built by the American occupation, the Marine occupation of 1915 to 1934. So also in this way, Haitians don't look too kindly on the palace, yet I know that almost every Haitian I speak to, from the top of society to the bottom, is very disturbed by the state of the building.
Let's talk about some of the NGOs and the aid organizations. Immediately after the earthquake, a lot of people, particularly in America and around the world, really opened up their hearts and their pocketbooks. Is the aid dollars going to the right places?
I can't say that on the ground I see a lot of money coming to the people. I mean, the biggest problem is rebuilding and reconstruction. You want to have some decent housing for these people instead of their living in tin and cardboard shacks that are susceptible to hurricane rains and winds. And it's been very, very slow going to develop a model for that kind of housing and then to get it constructed. You would think that 6 months after you would see a lot of building beginning at least, but no, not so. So that is a big problem. On the other hand, I would say that healthcare, there have been a lot of clinics opening up. I think Haitians, the very lowest levels of Haitian society are getting a lot better health care than they had been before the earthquake. And also clean water. That's one thing I've really seen as a change in Haiti. I think there's a lot less gastrointestinal terrible disease there because clean water has come in. But I think that because of corruption and also general slowness and the shock of the earthquake on the governmental infrastructure, it's been really, really hard to get the money from the NGOs to the people. And not all the money from the countries who promised money have come in. So they make a big promise at these donor conferences, and then they don't come forward. The foreign countries don't always come forward with the monies they've promised in the initial shock of the disaster.
The check's not cashing yet.
Exactly. The check's in the mail, you know?
Exactly. And these NGOs and the aid organizations, are they working independently or are they working with the Preval government in Haiti?
Well, one of the biggest problems in Haiti has been that they always have a lot of NGOs. They are working separately from the government. And there's a reason for that. The government has traditionally been extremely corrupt. What Preval has tried to do, some see it as Preval trying to make sure that monies get into the hands of corrupt government officials. But on the surface, what he's tried to do is create an interim reconstruction committee, and that is chaired by Bill Clinton and the Prime Minister of Haiti, Jean-Max Bellerive. And this interim commission tries to give the Haitian government some say over which projects are gone forward with and which projects do not meet governmental standards, whatever those might be.
If I understand it right, Sean Penn, the actor, has his own camp that he's set up?
Sean Penn, as far as I understand it, started up a came to run a camp that started as like 300 people right after the earthquake when Penn came down, and developed into a camp for 50,000 people. So he's the mayor of that camp, and he's gotten I went around the camp, and he's gotten a lot of very good people to come in and help out with it. But still, once the it looked like a model camp. It's on a golf course in the fancier part of town. But when the rains come, it's no longer a model camp because it's on a hillside and the rains are really forceful. So, but I think he's doing a good faith effort there.
My guest is Amy Willens. Her latest article, Running in the Ruins, is in this week's issue of The New Yorker. We're going to continue after we take a little break. Stay with us. Elliot Forrest here, and for Leonard Lope, talking to Amy Willens of The New Yorker. Her article is called Running in Ruins, Haiti Prepares to Elect a President. Let's do talk politics, Amy. What's a typical Haitian presidential election like, not after an earthquake?
Well, it can be pretty wild. If there are popular candidates running, usually there is some disturbance in the shanty towns and a lot of unrest, and politicians and the president can feed monies into the shanty towns to spark that kind of unrest, to pay for it, essentially. Also, there can be death threats against candidates. Candidates go into hiding. All sorts of drama surrounds a presidential election. That's when people are really voting. When people are not interested in the election, then it's calmer, but then the person who wins is not so much of a democratically elected candidate.
And how many people typically run for office?
Well, it usually starts out the way it did. It reminds me of nothing so much as the first Schwarzenegger election in California. Usually around 30 to 100 candidates try to become serious candidates. And this time it was 34. And I think out of those, 19 are still running.
And is it determined by party or, as you indicate, maybe like in California, more by personality?
Well, it's both. There are parties. Many of them are tiny, tiny parties, you know, basically one man or one woman parties, usually one man. But this time now, constitutionally, you have to register with your party. So you cannot run just as your own self. You have to find a party to run with, or you have to have a party to run with.
And how long is the term? How long do they run for normally?
5-year term. You can have 2 5-year terms. They don't have to be consecutive.
So you mentioned that in your article, and you just mentioned here by mid-August, there were 34 people who had signed up to be contenders. How does the winnowing down process actually work?
Well, that's the big controversy, especially for Wyclef Jean. The winnowing down process is done by something called the Provisional Electoral Council. And they come from different institutions in Haiti, the Catholic Church, the Episcopal Church. The Voodoo community sends in someone, I believe. It's a very interesting group, theoretically, but the rumor is that Préval handpicked each one of them and that he controls them and that he made all the decisions about who could run and who could not, including Wyclef. And that's certainly what Wyclef said in his most recent song, one of his first songs in Creole, about the election.
And I think I missed this, that he's officially out, according to your article.
Is that
right?
He's officially out, according to the Electoral Council, but not according to Wyclef Jean. And the reason why he's out is because since he was 9 years old, he has not lived in Haiti. But that's not the constitutional reason. The constitutional reason is that a president must have lived in Haiti for 5 years prior to becoming a candidate.
And he's been living in New Jersey.
And he has not. He's been living in New Jersey.
And the people of Haiti, did they want him to run? Were they behind him?
Well, Well, I met some people who like him a lot, and I met a lot of people who don't like him so much.
But was there a large groundswell of support for him?
I wouldn't say so, but I think that young people were excited, you know? I mean, this was someone who at least they'd heard of and they could relate to slightly. Wycliffe is 40, but a lot of the other candidates have been around for a long time, and they're very boring to young people. And Wycliffe is a hip-hop, you know, musician. That's very attractive to young people. Some of the young people I talked to couldn't have cared less about him. But I think there was some feeling that that would make the election at least interesting. And I think that's one of the reasons he was eliminated, aside from the, you know, the having had to live in Haiti issue, is that the Haitian political class doesn't want the election to be too interesting.
They'd rather just keep a status quo.
They would rather have a status quo in which they know what's going on. And I have to say about Wycliffe, it's a little arrogant to think that just because you're a millionaire pop star from New Jersey with Haitian origins that you can be president of a country. It's a little excessive.
And do you think that that feeling was shared by people there as well then?
I know it was shared by the by the elite and by the political class, but kids are kids. They love someone who's exciting, so I don't think they felt that way.
And President Préval, currently president of Haiti, was he supportive of Wycliffe's candidacy?
Let's put it this way. The day before Wycliffe was eliminated by the Electoral Council, Préval invited him in to the palace. Well, not to the palace, to the tent behind the palace where Préval works.
Where the palace used to be.
Yeah, the palace is there, but in terrible condition, and then there's a building behind it. And Préval invited him in, and he chatted with him for 2 hours, and he had his picture taken with him, and he had Wycliffe talk to Préval's party candidate, you know, on the telephone, just an introduction. And Wycliffe was so happy, and he Twittered about the meeting and put up the pictures of him and Préval shaking hands. And all I could think of was, oh, boy, you're in trouble, Wycliffe, because this is what Haitian presidents do when they don't like you. They act really, really, really nice. And then the next day, as I had thought, Wycliffe was eliminated, much to his shock.
So you said 34 people had signed up. That's down to 19 at this point. Are there any front runners?
Well, I would say that Préval's candidate is a front runner just by virtue of being the candidate of Préval's kind of coalition party, which actually, because he's been in government for a long time, Préval has some infrastructure. It has some networks out into the countryside. You know, he's been running the show for a long time, so his candidate, Jude Celestin, is likely to have some legs. And then there's Leslie Voltaire. He is an urban planner, and he's been in government for a long time. He's a very attractive candidate, but he's kind of from the upper class, so I don't know if the shanty towns could really get behind him. There's Mirlande Maniga. She's the wife of a former presidential hopeful who was president, Leslie Maniga, for 4 months. There are a bunch of people who are interesting, but, you know, they're kind of old faces.
Elliot Forrest in for Leonard Lopate. Today I'm talking to Amy Wilentz. She has an article in the current issue of The New Yorker about Haiti. Speaking of musicians, there's another one running, Michel Martelli, Sweet Mickey. Does he have a chance?
Well, I don't know if he has a chance, but he certainly is appealing. My theory about him when he first came into the race was that he was Préval's musician. Like, if Wycliffe was going to be approved by the council, then Préval would have Sweet Mickey in there to run against Wycliffe. Sweet Mickey is a very appealing guy, and he is he's more Haitian than Wycliffe, if an outsider can decide which Haitian is more Haitian, because Sweet Mickey has really spent more time in Haiti. He speaks Creole in his songs. He sings compa, which is a Creole kind of Haitian music, very different from Wycliffe's urban hip-hop. And he's very appealing, and I think young people like him a lot. I don't know how seriously he wants to be president, to be honest.
Amy, let me ask you about how the voting works, both, I guess, in regular times and in times post a devastating earthquake. Polling stations, voting age, is that likely to work well?
Well, one of the biggest problems for this election is that in the earthquake, as you can well imagine, since so much came down, people lost their documents. And you must have an identification document in order to vote, you know, a national ID. So a lot of what I saw when I was down in Haiti a few weeks ago was government offices opening up to allow people to come and get a new ID. So they are trying to deal with that in the run-up to the election. They're trying to deal with the documentation thing. They will be able to open offices for voting. There will be polling places. How honest the vote will be, I can't say.
Well, I was wondering how widespread corruption could be under these circumstances.
Well, it can be widespread. However, there is the UN. The UN has a presence, an armed presence in Haiti right now of about 11,000 men and women. And it was there before the earthquake and now has been added on to. So they're helping to oversee the elections along with the OAS, which is the Organization of American States, and CARICOM, the Caribbean organization. So those three are helping to oversee the elections and help out with transport and all that kind of stuff. That isn't to say that the UN might not have its preferred candidate also. You know, one never knows.
You write about the, I think it might pronounce it, MINUSTA, the UN security
the UN
forces.
Presence.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Tell us what they're up to there.
Well, they, you know, we always call them peacekeeping forces, but really when you have to keep the peace in Haiti, you get involved in politics. And they basically, after the coup against Aristide, in 2004, when the elected president of Haiti was ousted and sent into exile in South Africa now, MINUSTA came in and suppressed a lot of sort of small revolts against this coup d'etat. And so essentially they are seen as being against popular movements and for the status quo again. And I think they do work pretty well with Préval's government. But Préval, you have to understand, came out of popular movements himself. So he's a sort of crossroads figure. He's got one foot in the popular movements and one foot with the elite and ruling classes of Haiti.
Do you have someone you think would be best to rule Haiti in mind yourself?
Not really. I mean, a theory is that Préval wants to be prime minister, which constitutionally could be seen as being the more powerful figure, even though traditionally in Haiti the president has had all the power, so that he would manage to get elected a figurehead, and then he himself would run the country from the office of prime minister. So that's one theory about what's going to happen. I'm not saying I'm for that. I think Sweet Mickey would be a lot of fun, but I don't know if he really knows how to run a country. Haiti needs someone who knows how to run it.
You got to speak to the current president of Haiti. You might get the ear of the next one. What will you tell them needs to be focused on most?
They know what needs to be focused on most, and that's the needs of the Haitian people, the masses of Haitian people. Haiti has to be brought into this century. You know, everybody in Haiti has a cell phone. It's so incredible to watch Haitians dealing with the cell phone. It's such a modern instrument. They use it perfectly. They use it for all of their needs. They bring things to market. They call trucks to pick up their rice from the village, remote villages. They walk up to the tops of mountains to get service to arrange market shipments. So they can be brought into this century if their government simply will show the will to help them.
I've been speaking with Amy Wilentz about her article, Running in the Ruins, which appears in this week's issue of The New Yorker. You can find a link to the article on our show page at WNYC.org. Amy, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot.